This is the WUSB Peace Movement update for Sunday, January 20th. There were 100,000 people at the rally on January 19th in Washington, D.C. Another rally is scheduled for next Saturday, the 26th. Buses will be leaving from Southampton, West Hampton, Patchogue, Fort Jefferson, and Smithtown. Numbers to call for those buses are 744-2745-369-2171 and 744-2442, all area code 516. There's also a bus leaving from Stony Brook, and if you want more information on that, call 516-689-7290. Also, on Saturdays, every Saturday, there's a vigil at Congressman George Hochbruckner's office at the intersection of Route 347 and Wireless Road. The vigil runs starting at 12 p.m. And if you want information on contacting more elected officials, we suggest you call the League of Women Voters for the phone numbers and addresses of those elected officials. The phone number for the League of Women Voters is 549-4171, area code 516. On Sunday, January 20th, there will be a rally at the H. Lee Dennison Building in Hopog. That's on the road called 347 or 454. We'll be starting at 10 a.m. on Sunday. A rally at the Dennison Building sponsored by UJA. Also on Sunday, a prayer vigil for peace will be held at the Bridgehampton United Methodist Church in Bridgehampton. The church is the first one on the right as you enter Bridgehampton from the west on Montauk Highway. People who have loved ones in the Gulf are urged to come. Support groups will be organized. The number to call for more information on this prayer vigil is 537-0753, area code 516. That's Sunday the 20th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at the Bridgehampton United Methodist Church. A day of peace and sharing is planned at the John Glenn High School, the Huntington Area Student Strike for Peace, on Wednesday, January 30th, 1991, starting at 8 a.m. For more information on that, 499-6392. The WUSB Peace Movement Update is heard every hour on the hour, bringing you news of local and national efforts to help stop the Gulf War. If you have information on events of any sort, please call us and let us know so we can spread the word. Our number is 516-632-6498.
Stardate January 19th. The outer planets have much bigger orbits than the orbit of Earth. They also travel more slowly in orbit. We zoom around the Sun once each year, while Jupiter takes 12 Earth years to complete an orbit, Saturn 30 years, Uranus 84, and Neptune 165 years to complete a single orbit around the Sun. So you might see that there's a time every year when these outer worlds are on the opposite side of the Sun from us. For Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, the time has just passed. All three outer worlds are located now along more or less the same line of sight from Earth, the same line of sight as that to the Sun in the past few weeks. This sort of event is called a conjunction by astronomers. Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune were all in conjunction with the Sun. The conjunction of Uranus came first on New Year's Eve. Then it was Neptune's turn less than a week later. Saturn's conjunction was yesterday. It passed directly behind the Sun from us in a sort of mini eclipse of Saturn by the Sun. Now all three planets will be returning to the sky before dawn. There's special excitement this year surrounding Saturn's return. Astronomers will be watching for any signs of the aftermath of a gigantic storm on Saturn, watched through telescopes this past fall. It was the largest storm on Saturn in more than half a century, and we'll talk more about it tomorrow. Our program is Stardate. Our writer and producer is Deborah Bird. For a copy of Stardate magazine, send your name and address and a dollar for postage and handling to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, Austin, Texas, zip 78712, and give us the name of your Stardate station. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
forgetting to give back. Isn't it a pity?
The music is from George Harrison off a record called All Things Must Pass. A lot of people have been asking what that is because that is the theme for our Peace Movement update, which we've been airing ever since, well, ever since just before war broke out in the Gulf, when we kind of knew it was likely. And the song is Isn't It a Pity? Isn't It a Shame? This has been a really eventful and a really sad week for a lot of us, and an extremely tiring week for just about everybody over there and over here. And it's only the beginning. Only the beginning of something that's going to be changing a lot of us, a lot of our physical lives, a lot of our mental conditions. We're going to, of course, be talking about this and pretty much only this tonight on Brain Damage. And we also have a special feature for you coming up in just a couple of seconds. Recording taken off Israeli radio tonight. And, of course, folks in Israel living through hell as well, not knowing when those missiles are going to come raining down. Jim Wiener.
Hiya.
How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Crazy times we live in, eh?
Yes. Yes, tumultuous.
Yeah. What kind of reaction have you seen on the faces of people in New York? I know you work in the city. And
well, I'd say that my own impression is that some people, you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell that they were reacting to anything. But I have seen other people, in particular people I work with, where I'm able to maybe speak a little bit with them or see them up close, and I can see a definite reaction on their part, especially the first night that the war broke out. There was a when it actually happened, I guess about 6:30, 7 p.m. Eastern time, there was a definite look of concern and anxiety on people's faces. And
it's affecting a lot of people in a lot of ways. I was also working in the city, and people broke down. You know, they could not go on because it was just so stressful. Knowing that this was coming, knowing that something bad was going to happen, and you know, a lot of people might be saying, hey, what's so bad? We seem to be winning. We seem to be doing quite well. And if it was all to end tomorrow, maybe we could get away with saying it wasn't that bad. But you just get this very ominous feeling that there's so much more to it, that it's going to go on for so much longer, there'll be so many more casualties, and maybe some fatal mistakes are being made that will not soon be mended. Get that feeling?
Well, it's certainly possible that that could, I don't know that it would definitely happen, but it's certainly possible that it could happen, because we're dealing, of course, with human beings who make mistakes, and I think that although the war is in and of itself a certain line that has been crossed, I think it's part of a larger continuum of various diplomatic and general foreign policies of different countries and political and economic conditions. And
but right now, all that's been cast aside.
Well, yes, but see, that's why I bring it up.
Right.
It's a good point that you make. It's been cast aside, and I bring it up because what I'm suggesting is that, as you said, if it would all just end, if this would indeed be a war to end all wars somehow and put everything back in equilibrium where diplomatic and political and economic solutions could avoid war forever, yeah, maybe it would, we could get away with saying that's great. But what is what gives one pause is the idea that people do cast all these thoughts aside. Not everybody, but I think many people do. And I'm concerned that some people feel, well, once we're in the war, it was inevitable, and we have to, this is what we have to do, and that people don't necessarily think about how a war in the future can be averted. And I mean, I think that there are, let's say, United States generals that aren't particularly happy about going to war. Certainly it's part of their job, I mean, to put it in, make it an understatement, but I don't know that they're even particularly happy about the idea of sending people into battle.
Well, I don't think we've ever seen such a reaction from so many different kinds of people saying that war is bad. There's much less of a gung-ho reaction here, and I see people seeing the actual tragedies of war because there's so much that we can remember. We can look back on and see the Vietnam veterans still struggling with what they've had to go through, and it's all still in our memories. We can look at the TV set and see what war looks like. We can see the blood. We can see the agony. We can see the after effects. So we know that war is not that glorious thing that it's been written about in the past. We know that war is a terrible thing and something to be avoided at all costs. And the only reason that we're in war right now is because we have failed and we have not given other things enough of a chance. We have not tried hard enough. And both sides, I think, are equally guilty as far as that goes. I'm not saying both sides are equally bad. I'm saying both sides are equally guilty as to not finding a solution some other way, and it's a tragedy. You know, even if the war ended tomorrow, it's a tragedy that we had to resort to this. Think of it. I mean, basically, what it boils down to is firing pieces of lead at each other. You know, that's how we're trying to solve a conflict, solve an argument. Now, if you and I did that, Jim, I mean, apart from the way we used to settle our differences in the past, people would look upon us as barbaric, as not fit to walk the streets of society. Yet that is how we are solving this conflict. It's, you know, it's enough to make you wish to be some other kind of species. But
yeah, I think that it's not a question so much of pointing a finger or blame it at certain individuals one way or the other, as much as or even taking certain partisan stance, let's say in this country. But I think that that overall, it's, as you say, more a question of of thinking of ourselves just as people in general and musing on how sad it is that yet we find that there is another war that is taking place. And there may be arguments advanced on both sides as to whether or not at this point it has or has not, or it should or should not happen. But to go beyond the specific issues, I think there's a broader question of how can people be able to start to think and start to act in such a way where they realize that the objectives that people or countries have in mind don't have to be settled militarily. What I mean by that is that you can reach a point where maybe that's the only choice, where someone can make a compelling argument for that. What I'm saying is that it would be good to think that we could reach a point where people were aware, where we all could be aware more keenly of non-military alternatives to
I think we have reached that to a large degree, but we haven't reached it enough. Obviously, we wouldn't be in this condition now. One thing that I think, if you're going to get into any kind of a positive view of this whole situation, one positive thing I see here is the strength of the peace movement and the diversity of the peace movement. And that's something that in the later part of the show, after we do this Israel radio feature, we're going to get into in depth. But I've been wavering. You know, I've been having all kinds of different feelings throughout this whole thing, saying, you know, well, I feel great, I feel terrible. And the times when I feel great are the times that I see people speaking out against this. And you would never guess it by watching TV and listening to the radio other than community stations like USB. You would never guess that there is another voice being heard. You would think that we were all rallying around the flag and speaking in one voice. It's not that way. It really is not. And there's a lot to be discussed here. There's a lot to be learned. Jim, I thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
And let's hope next time you're by, which will be, what, in 3 weeks?
Yes.
That we'll have more happy things to talk about.
Yes.
Do you think we will?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a very, at this point, that's a more thought-provoking question than it would normally be.
Well, I agree with you there. What we're going to do now, if you listen behind us, you'll hear voices speaking in French. And those voices are coming from Jerusalem. And basically it's the shortwave service of Kol Israel, which is the Israeli radio service. In a moment they will be speaking English and bringing you a news broadcast, which is about an hour ago. From Jerusalem, so you can hear for yourself what is going on over there. And the cast of characters keeps expanding in the Gulf War. Now Israel is involved. Fortunately, they've been restrained up until now. How much longer can that last? We don't know. And how many more characters will be involved in another week? We don't know that either. Let's listen to Israeli radio.
Ils diront, voilà, nous avons la possibilité là de faire preuve d'une certaine maturité politique et nous pouvons prouver au monde entier que nous disposons d'une force, mais nous savons quand l'utiliser à bon escient et pas de manière précipitée.
Yehoshua Raj, merci.
Voilà, c'est tout pour notre magazine. Je cède le micro à Georges Lévy.
Merci, Stoati. Je vous rappelle l'essentiel de l'actualité. Les missiles solaires américains Patriot arrivés ce soir en Israël sont apparemment déjà opérationnels. Une fausse alerte aux missiles à 22h israélienne. Des dizaines de pays expriment leur soutien à Israël après les attaques de missiles. Les combats se poursuivent avec un gouvernement en Irak, mais aussi au Koweït. C'est tout pour le moment. Prochain rendez-vous à 7h15, heure israélienne, 5h15 en temps universel. Je vous rappelle qu'en raison des circonstances, nous émettons simultanément sur 576 et 1458 kHz, ondes moyennes, et en ondes courtes sur 7465, 9435 et 11605 kHz pour l'Europe et l'Amérique du Nord, et sur 17630 kHz pour l'Afrique. A tout à l'heure donc. 7h15, prochain rendez-vous avec l'actualité. Vous avez les comptes sur Kol Israël, la voix d'Israël émettant de Jérusalem.
Kol Israël, the voice of Israel, Jerusalem. Good morning to our local listeners. It is 3 a.m. Israel time. Shalom Aleichem around the world. It is 0100 hours UTC. This is David Zev with a special news report on the Gulf War. The country has been quiet tonight after missile attacks during the early morning hours of the past 2 days. Some 5 hours ago, sirens were sounded, but within moments, the country was reassured that there was no attack, and people were told to remove their gas masks and leave their sealed rooms. As the United States continues to ask Israel to show restraint following the Iraqi attacks on the country, the Americans have now taken an unprecedented step to reassure Jerusalem. U.S. Patriot missiles, and for the first time, American troops to operate them have arrived here. The Patriot have already been used in the Gulf War to intercept the Scud missile in an attack on Saudi Arabia. Military reporter Alan Ben-Ami has more.
Giant C-5 Galaxy planes flew the missile defense systems into Israel today in an impressive American airlift operation. Two systems had arrived earlier this month, and the latest shipment is a significant boost to Israel's overall air defense network. Although the Patriot was originally designed as a ground-to-air missile against aircraft, Recent improvements in its radar and flight performances have allowed the Patriot to be launched successfully against incoming missiles as well. The improved anti-missile system has shown an 80% success rate in the test firings against surface-to-surface missiles. A single system can track as many as 100 targets at the same time and has an effective firing range of 150 kilometers. Several missiles can be launched simultaneously from the same system at individual targets. The Patriot is the next generation of the Hawk missile system and puts Israeli air defense into a new era. U.S. teams are here to help Israeli Air Force units deploy and to initially operate the system. There's no indication of how many Patriots have now arrived in Israel, but former Air Force Chief Moti Horn says that just two Patriot systems can provide Tel Aviv with a very good defense against missile attack. Not 100%, he said, but certainly the capability of scoring a high percentage of hits. The Patriots have already been used in Saudi Arabia, where at least one Iraqi Scud missile was destroyed in the air. David Ivry, Director General of Israel's Defense Minister, and himself a former Air Force chief, said tonight that the Patriots will start being operational within hours. This is Alan Ben-Ami in Tel Aviv.
And to update, the U.S. Pentagon has announced that the Patriots are already operational at this hour. In Washington, Pentagon spokesman Pete Williams discussed the delivery of the Patriots and called the presence of U.S. troops in Israel an extraordinary step.
Israel has tried from the beginning to stay out of this conflict. By attacking the civilian population of Israel, Iraq is trying to widen the war. These attacks further demonstrate how dangerous and ruthless the Iraqi leadership is. We also believe that the deployment of these Patriot units will help Israel maintain the extremely positive posture that it has kept in this crisis. The Patriot deployment is part of our overall approach to defeat the threat of Scud missiles from Iraq. I can't go into the operational details, obviously, but we are dealing with the Scud threat by trying to destroy them before the launchers can be dispersed, before the missiles can be launched, after they're launched, and by providing early warning for the civil population. Secretary Cheney said just a short while ago on returning from Camp David that the Scud threat continues to be a high priority concern for us. We've knocked out part of Iraq's ability to launch Scuds, and there were fewer last night than the night before, but it continues to be a threat that we're working very hard to overcome. There's no one single answer to the Scud threat, but our very active and serious efforts, as well as those of our coalition partners, will bring the threat down drastically and as quickly as possible eliminate it. Now, the units that we're providing to Israel, both Patriot fire units and the crews to operate them, began to arrive today. The first units are now operational. The decision to have U.S. troops man the Patriots is an extraordinary step, but it's been taken in view of the unconscionable attacks on Israel. I have some other announcements, but are there any questions specifically about Patriots? And then we'll deal with the Scud questions later.
Do you think this is a temporary arrangement? How long will it take for the U.S. personnel who have been deployed to Israel to train the Israelis? Is that, in fact, what the goal is?
Okay, there's two separate components to the Patriot support. The Israelis have purchased Patriot units, and they were there before. And there's a training program going on now as to when the Israeli forces, the Israeli Defense Forces, will be fully trained up to man those Patriots. That's an operational detail that I can't discuss. Now, the Patriots that are arriving and that became operational today, the crews to operate them came with them. And U.S. crews will be there to operate them and to assist Israeli forces in operating them as well. So, in other words, what we have sent to Israel, and it's arrived there today, is a fully up, fully manned operational system.
How many? Just take one question at a time, and I'll point to you. How many U.S. military troops will be deployed temporarily to Israel?
I'm not going to go into specific numbers.
Okay. Is this the first time the U.S. troops have been deployed on Israeli soil?
Well, the U.S. troops are you know, U.S. military personnel are present in almost every country with which we have diplomatic relations. There are Marine Guards, there are defense attachés, and so forth.
But in a peace combat role?
Well, first time is always a risky one. Let me look into that. I'm not positive of that.
Will American forces be used to man the Israeli-owned Patriot missile system?
No, these American forces are... We got a program to train Israeli defense forces. That training program is going on now. That's a separate question.
These Patriot batteries or fire units that arrive today will be manned by U.S., primarily by U.S. troops.
The Patriot missiles arrived today after the second Iraqi missile attack in as many days. This morning at about 7:15 local time, missiles landed in Greater Tel Aviv and the nearby Sharon region. All the missiles were launched towards Iraq. They carried conventional, not chemical, warheads. 16 people were treated at Tel Aviv Israel Hospital. From one of the locations where the missiles hit, Al Ben Ami filed this report.
That's a piece of a metal from the missile that landed here at about 7 o'clock this morning. The missile crashed into the side of a shelter, clipping open a corner of that shelter and leaving a large crater next to it. The explosion and the shrapnel from the missile have caused quite widespread damage in the buildings all around me. An apartment building with a small part of an outer wall torn away, and you can see chairs and a table in the room inside. On the opposite side of the road from me, another apartment building, its windows gone, a little bit of damage to the porch, the front porch. People in the neighborhood, of course, out on the streets, looking at what's happened, being kept away from the area by police and civil defense men who are here in force. Some of the people standing around are wearing prayer shawls. They've returned from Shabbat morning prayers, something which they did not want to stay away from, despite the events of the early morning here.
Something like 7 o'clock, we heard an alarm again, and 1 minute after the alarm, there was a bomb. Very close to it, we see this place. And the light closed. We put the mask on our faces and we wait. Then we go upstairs to see what the damage. First of all, I am happy that my family is alive and everybody is alive. That's the very important thing that we can hope, that everybody is alive. What can we do? Our houses are damaged. We hope to better.
You know, there's a discussion as to whether or not Israel should retaliate or not. That there are reasons to retaliate and reasons not to retaliate. How do you feel?
I think that we don't have to do something, because the Iraqian Saddam Hussein waits for our fun. And if we'll do something, the whole Arab countries will be against us, and there won't be a coalition against Saddam Hussein.
So you think that people should sit and take it? Do you think the people can sit and take it?
This is my opinion. I think that the people, my house destroyed too, but in spite of that, I think that it should be better if we won't do anything.
Zubin Mehta, how do you react to all of this?
I said it's miraculous that the rocket hit one empty spot. There is no other empty spot in this area. And I tell you what, this Saddam Hussein, he doesn't know what kind of people he's fighting. It's not the coalition here. These are people from his area. They understand him. They speak his dialect. Remember that.
Maestro, you came back to Israel from abroad when you heard that war was likely to break out in this area. How has it been for you? How have you managed in the 2-3 nights of alarms and attacks?
First of all, it's been good for my soul to be here. I couldn't think of being in any other place at this moment. I've talked so much, I've lost my voice.
But you haven't lost your stubbornness, I gather.
No, the spirit, these people's spirit is so high. They are poor Iranians and the Iraqis whose homes have been shattered. But the mayor will take them to hotels and take care of them. And they know that. This is very, to have a mayor like this at this moment is, that's their miracle, this city.
Melahat, yes. What's your first reaction to what you're seeing here?
Thank God.
No casualties, no killed, no wounded.
There are three people who got a little shot,
They are well treated in the hospital, and that's it. There is a damage. We'll take care of the people. We'll take care of the damage.
What about the people, though? Do you think that they're going to be able to keep taking this?
Of course. I mean, don't you know the Israelis? The Israelis are strong. They are confirmed. They are devoted. We don't have an alternative. We have only one country.
There is no alternative.
At the same time, there are voices being heard calling for reaction from Israel.
Reaction is a matter of the Prime Minister and the government of Israel, the Minister of Defense. I am not a policymaker. I have to take care of the people. That's it.
Overall, can we expect more of this, you think?
I'm afraid it is. I mean, it's not the last missile. Yes, and we should be ready and prepared and strong, devoted, and keep smiling.
And as a big smile appears on Mayor Shlomo Lahat's face, this is Alan Ben-Ami returning you to the studio in Jerusalem.
Israel will continue operating according to the information it has at its disposal and will make decisions only after a thorough scrutiny of all the diplomatic and military aspects. That was the statement issued by Defense Minister Moshe Arendt at the end of a Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee meeting at his office. None of the participants in the meeting expressed support for the government's policy of restraint. Army officers who briefed the committee said sealed rooms were still the safest place for people in case of a missile attack. Deputy Foreign Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel is not aiming to punish Iraq for the present. He told reporter Jack Katznell the government's aim is to find ways of removing the threat of the Iraqi missiles, and new measures are being considered for this purpose. Netanyahu was asked if the use of the Jericho missile is one of these measures, but he refused to go into details.
Well, we will do what we think is necessary in order to help secure the airspace of Israel from attacks by Iraqi missiles. That's what I can say. When we will do it, how we will do it, at what time, over what period of time, that, of course, is something that I simply cannot discuss at this point.
General Pellet, Benny Pellet, was asked today, what can the Israeli Air Force accomplish in western Iraq against the Iraqi missiles that the United States Air Force has so far failed to accomplish? And his answer was, nothing. Assuming he is right, what possible advantage could Israel derive from retaliatory strike against these missiles? Would it not even damage the image of Israel's deterrent power?
No, I don't think it will damage the image. If we are out to punish Iraq, which is not the issue for the moment, if that is the consideration, there's plenty that we can do. But this is not our consideration right now. Our consideration right now is to help secure the skies over Israel. This is our prime objective. That may require a series of actions, but I don't want to get into that kind of discussion.
Deputy Foreign Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Now for the latest in the overall Gulf War, over to reporter Danny Goraier.
Well, reports from the Pentagon say the American force may wait until February to add a ground assault to its air war on Iraq. The border between Saudi Arabia and Kuwait is already getting hot. Earlier today, there were reports of artillery and small arms fire exchange on both sides of the border. The report said U.S. advanced ground forces toward the source of the Iraqi fire. Sources in Washington, meanwhile, said the Allied forces would begin shifting the targets of their bombing raids from strategic targets to troop concentrations in Iraq and Kuwait. All this, as U.S. Defense Secretary Dick Cheney today authorized the armed services to activate up to an additional 200,000 military reservists. Also today, the toll of Allied aircraft losses in the Gulf War rose to 10 with the crash of a U.S. Marine ground support plane. U.S. defense officials said the Marine turboprop OV-10 had been lost with its two-man crew while directing fire against Iraqi artillery positions in Kuwait. And the first 12 Iraqi prisoners of the Gulf War spent their first full day in captivity. The soldiers were captured on Friday in a U.S. raid on 9 Kuwaiti oil platforms in the Gulf, used by Iraqi troops to fire on Allied aircraft. The prisoners spent the night in a pit dug in the sand to protect them from incoming Iraqi fire in the area. The Americans gave them sleeping bags and boots and gas masks. Danny Guerrier reporting.
You're listening to a special news report from Kol Yisrael, broadcasting from Jerusalem. The British, French, and West German governments have condemned the second Iraqi missile strike on Tel Aviv, but all three governments hope Israel will not retaliate. The Chinese premier called on all parties involved in the Gulf War to exercise the greatest restraint and prevent new escalation of war. Japan's foreign minister also called for maximum restraint.
In Amman, Jordan's King Hussein says
Jordan will try to defend its airspace regardless of who tries to violate it. The king was speaking at a news conference in which he discussed everything from his new beard, which he says was grown because of his rash on his face, to the extremist resolutions of the Jordanian parliament concerning the Gulf War. Here's an excerpt from the news conference.
Jordan are defending our territory in every direction. We are fully mobilized to do so, to the best of our ability. And we will try to prevent any coming in our airspace or violence. We have imposed one death, and we have only sought a comprehensive peace. A lasting peace to the Arab Israeli problem, the Palestinian Israeli dimension, and to all other problems.
Why is Jordan concentrating troops close to the Iraqi border?
Jordan is looking at its responsibilities and looking at the commitment we made to defend our borders and our airspace and Ukraine. And we do not have any of what is on your mind. Believe that there is any threat from the rest of us. But we have no time and we have deployed pushing in every direction at any possibility. Holding still to be considered a neutral country after a vote in Parliament last night, I don't know if this will move in this context. And I don't know if Jordan could have done. Jordan, I believe, is trying to avert the disaster. It will be regretted by those who survive it, not only in the region, but in the world, with all its ramifications.
British Prime Minister John Major has expressed his outrage over the latest Iraqi missile strike on Israel. From London, here's Jerry Lewis.
John Major told an impromptu press conference on the steps of 10 Downing Street at lunchtime today that he just sent two messages to the Israeli Premier Yitzhak Shamir. In the first, he expressed sympathy for the second outrageous Iraqi attack, and in the second, he expressed concern about the possibility of Israel taking retaliatory action.
I think it is extremely deplorable, unforgivable in any sense, that this particular attack has taken place.
The missile attack, he added, drew a sharp contrast between the nature of the conflict in westernized and that chosen by Saddam Hussein. The Allied forces have been using very precise bombing techniques, and the pilots have often gone to some personal risk to avoid civilian injury and to concentrate on military targets.
By contrast, of course, Saddam Hussein has now twice sent extremely dangerous weapons into the middle of a built-up area where there are a large number of civilians in a country that is not a party to this particular conflict. I think that is quite literally an act of terror. I will be seen as such.
But he was anxious to ensure that his second message also got through to the Israeli premier.
I hope, even despite this second provocation, that it would be an act of great statesmanship if Israel did not retaliate. I think it would be seen as a sign of great strength and not weakness. And he will know, of course, that the Allied forces are seeking to find and destroy those Scud missile launchers as an act of immediate priority.
Mr. Major went on to make clear that the state of Israel had a perfect right in international law to respond, and he believed that their restraint so far had been admirable. Asked how he would react if Israel took some limited military action, he said of course he would understand, but
I think it would be extremely helpful if that restraint continued, but I understand the pressures that the Israeli government are under.
Meanwhile, the Iraqi ambassador in London was called to the Foreign Office this morning and asked to convey to Baghdad the British government's condemnation of Iraq's unprovoked aggression against Israel. In what was termed a brisk exchange, a British official told him that they were outraged that Iraq should make indiscriminate attacks on Israel's civilian population. This is Jerry Lewis in London.
Back in Israel, Police Minister Rani Milo has praised the behavior of the civilian population. He added that the Arab sector, both citizens of Israel and residents of the territories, has remained quiet. He called on them to continue showing restraint, or else Israel will have to take measures enabling it to deal with the rear and the front as a country at war needs to do. The army is investigating the death of a woman resident of the Askar refugee camp in Nablus during a stone-throwing incident today. Elsewhere, the territories are quiet. The strict curfew continues. More from reporter Mark Weiss.
This morning's incident in the Askar refugee camp in Nablus
occurred when residents threw stones and defied the curfew. Palestinian sources said residents were celebrating the Iraqi missile strikes against Israel. A 20-year-old woman resident of the camp was shot and killed, and her body was brought to the Al Ittihad Hospital in Nablus. The army is still investigating the incident, although it seems the woman was hit by rubber bullets fired by soldiers at the stone throwers.
U.S. Congressman Bob Dornan, who is a member of the U.S. Armed Services Committee, says in light of Israel's policy of restraint, the U.S. will stop pressuring Israel to consent to an international conference on the Middle East. In an interview with Kol Yisrael, Dornan said Israel had won many new friends in the U.S. in recent days with its policy of restraint. Large crowds of Jews have been gathering in countries abroad to show support and concern. Thus, according to Mendel Kaplan, chairman of the Jewish Agency's Board of Governors. He told reporter Miriam Hirschlag that recent events have galvanized and unified diaspora Jewry.
World Jewry is unifying around Israel at this moment. They're gathering in crowds throughout their cities, in their synagogues, concerned, involved, identified, wanting to show their support and solidarity with the state at this moment of trial.
Do you know of particular gatherings that should be?
Yes, I hear that 2,000 people will be coming together. Well, I think it's more than 2,000 the next day in Cape Town. I understand that at the synagogue in Johannesburg, 8,000 people come together for prayers on Friday night. And right throughout the world, there are these similar gatherings of people concerned with the danger that Israel is in at the moment.
Jewish Agency Board of Governors Chairman Mendel Kaplan. Reserve Brigadier Aryeh Biro, a former head of civil defense, thinks it is preferable for the population to use air raid shelters when attacks are launched against Israel rather than sealed rooms. He told our correspondent that people sitting in a sealed shelter and equipped with gas masks are better protected from both conventional and chemical weapons. However, the defense minister's advisor for the rear echelon, Major General Yaakov Lapidot, told us earlier that in all likelihood, the instruction to stay in sealed rooms and don gas masks will be retained. The large chain stores will open all their branches tomorrow from the morning until 7 p.m. Yossi Rosen, the head of the chain network, said no shortage is expected in basic products and ordinary supplies will be available. Bakeries are starting to bake bread tonight. They've been doing it since 6 p.m. Israel time, right after the Shabbat, the Sabbath ended. In view of the shortage of ceiling tape, the local factory is working around the clock. Tomorrow, tape will be supplied to the marketing chains. Schools will not be open tomorrow. Now repeating, Israel has been quiet tonight after missile attacks during the early morning hours of the past 2 days. Shortly before 10 p.m. local time earlier tonight, sirens were sounded, but within moments the country was reassured that there was no attack and people were told to remove their gas masks and to leave their sealed rooms. Top stories at this hour. U.S. Patriot missiles have arrived in Israel for the first time. American troops are operating them. The Pentagon in Washington has said the missiles are already operational. The Patriots arrived after the second attack on Israel in 2 days. Deputy Foreign Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel is not aiming to punish Iraq for the present. In Amman, Jordan's King Hussein repeats that Jordan will try to defend its airspace, regardless of who tries to violate it. And in the Gulf War, tensions on the Kuwaiti-Saudi border. Now, we will be on the air again in about 35 minutes at 4 a.m. Israel time, 2 a.m. UTC, also at 7 a.m. in Israel in a few hours, 5 hours UTC. Until then, stay tuned. This is David Zeb wishing you a good morning and shalom from Jerusalem.
We have been listening to a transmission that was received tonight from Kol Israel, which is the Israeli broadcasting service to the world, and an indication of how tense things have gotten over there and how no one really knows what will be happening next. We'll be taking phone calls, talking to some high school people, and finding out what's going on around the area, around the nation, as far as the peace movement. The program is Brain Damage. This is Eric Corley with you up until midnight.
Is it a
That is a very rare, little-known version of George Harrison's song, isn't it? Actually, I shouldn't say it's rare because it's on the same album that the non-rare one is on. It's called Version 2 of Isn't It a Pity, and has the exact same lyrics, but totally different instrumentation. Well, we have another piece of music here, and if you're a demonstrator, somebody that's been involved in demonstrations recently, it might have some meaning for you. And if not, stay tuned. In 2 minutes, we will explain why. And that was a piece of music. We have John here in the studio, and he's going to tell us what that was. What was that?
That was SSD Control with a song called Police Beat.
Police Beat.
So I think it's like, it's really out of print now. I don't think you can really find it.
It's pretty old?
It's pretty old, yeah.
Yeah?
It's from like 82.
So. That is pretty old. What's the song about?
The song's called Police Beat. It's about police brutality, and I like to dedicate that song to all the cops who are responsible for the woman who fell off the Brooklyn Bridge.
And, now, were the cops responsible for that? Was it the drunken driver that came through the crowd?
No, he was responsible for the people he nailed down who were
now, you were there.
I was 5 feet from the
right,
whole
first
thing.
First of all, let's backtrack a bit here. Now, I've been looking in the newspapers, looking in Newsday, looking in the New York Times. I've heard this from so many people that there was a demonstration on, Wednesday night? And it was in New York City. People marched to the Brooklyn Bridge and tried to block traffic. And some lunatic who was apparently drunk or something plowed through the crowd with his car. And as a result of that, and we're about to find out exactly how it happened, some people fell off the bridge. One person died. One person had two broken legs. None of that was in the papers anywhere, but it did happen. It did happen. Now, John, you were a few feet away from this, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about it. What exactly happened?
Well, the whole march in itself was like a total success.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had like a lot of supporters, you know.
You guys were in the studio here at USB,
yeah.
right before you left. In fact, if people remember on Wednesday night, we were doing reports, we were doing the BAI teach-in, and you guys came down to tell us about the buses going to Washington, and then you went to the city. So you marched down to the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
So what? Take it from there.
We marched down to the Brooklyn Bridge, and we stopped traffic. And even all the people that were being stopped were supporting us, you know. So we were getting a lot of peace signs out the window, and a lot of people applauding us, a lot of support. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes some guy in a red car, smashing through people. And it was really kind of hard to like hook it up with reality. Because, I mean, you're so used to seeing things like that in the movies,
mm-hmm.
and that it just, you know, you think about it, and your first reaction is, you know, this is not reality. It doesn't, it doesn't really hit you at first, you know. But the first instinct I had was to grab the person closest to me who was hit, and to help him to the side of the road, which was a girl who apparently got her leg pretty much smashed up.
Well, I heard there was a girl who was a dancer that had two legs broken.
Yeah.
That's the report we got a couple of days ago.
Mm.
So,
I really read the papers on it, you know. I mean, I'm afraid to see what the papers have to say about it.
There hasn't been anything in the papers. I was looking in the papers. I did not see a word about it.
Really?
And I mean, you know, somebody just dies in the sidewalk, they usually print something about that, but they didn't even print anything. I mean, maybe I missed it. If someone has an article out there, please call us up and read it to us, but I did not see anything. Now, what happened with people falling off the bridge, and how did the police tie into this?
Well, the thing what was going on was the cops were shuffling people to get off the bridge, you know, saying, you know, you're not helping these people get off the bridge if you're not hurt. And, you know, they're taking out their billy clubs and everything. I didn't actually see them hit anybody, but they were, you know, shuffling people around. And so I don't know, I think some lady was standing by the side or something. And while the people were being shuffled around, there was like a bunch of people like got pushed up against the side or something. And the lady fell over the edge. And, for this whole thing, the cops who were there, who are escorts, they had time. While they were sitting there, someone had time to bicycle off the Brooklyn Bridge down to a payphone to make a phone call to 911. So, you know, that's where our police are at.
Boy, pretty scary situation. Apart from that, you've been involved in the anti-war movement now. You weren't in Washington today, though, were you?
No, I was in Washington today. I'm going to 26th. We're trying to get a second bus started. So
now you're part of the group that's getting a bus organized for Stony Brook.
Yeah, it's already organized, but it's like sold out.
Uh huh. So that means that's actually good, isn't it? If a lot of people want to go to.
Oh yeah.
You're getting a lot of calls.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not selling tickets personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But you're involved in the.
I'm involved in. Yeah, I have my ticket. I got my ticket. So.
Uh huh. Now that's. That's a $15 round trip. It might be $25. You told me before.
Well, the second bus. I was talking to someone today, and they said that if there's a second bus, it'll probably be $25.
Right.
You know, which is
buses are expensive.
Yeah, right? It's unfortunate, you know, but I think it's really worth it. you know, to have your voice.
Right, you take Amtrak, it's like $90.
Yeah.
So, it's not
well, a drive, it's free, you know.
Well, not really. You got to pay pay gas, right? You know.
Yeah, and tolls and everything.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. But, all right, so if you get a second bus, then obviously more and more people will be going to this thing. There's also buses leaving from other towns on Long Island. There are 100,000 people there today in Washington, D.C. Again, the media coverage was kind of crazy. I was watching TV looking for updates on this and then listening to USB as well as we were simulcasting the Pacifica feed.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing on USB that there were 100,000 people down there and not seeing anything on TV. And you wonder, why is this? You know, why are they deliberately ignoring this?
But you said something like you saw the pro-war march of about
they did
2,200 people or something.
Well,
like
no,
that.
there was a pro. I don't want to say pro-war because that might not be completely fair. I don't know if there are that many people that are pro-war, but
pro-America.
Well, in their minds, pro-America and anti-war demonstrators, based more than anything else, by waving the flag and saying yes, let's win the war. And pretty much accusing the people that don't want the war to continue of being anti-American. Those kind of people. I don't know what you would call them. Pro-war, I don't want to call them that because I really can't believe they're pro-war.
And I'd like to know who created this thought that a peace is unpatriotic or something like that.
Yeah, that's really the media is spreading
that
around. And that's something that there was one TV station in Connecticut that broadcast something a couple of days ago. They said, so now there are two groups of demonstrators. There are the anti-war demonstrators and the patriotic demonstrators. It's like, you know, how dare you accuse the anti-war people of not being patriotic? Mm-hmm. I mean, some of them aren't patriotic, but some of them are. And some of them, you know, carry the flag, too, and they have every right to. They're as much a part of this country as anyone else. By stripping you of that, it's a really bad thing. And you know, I've been very disappointed with the way I've seen things covered. It's been sort of like a propaganda, 100% propaganda on NBC, CBS, ABC, just hitting you over and over again with our proud, soldiers over there and how we're all supporting you back here. Now, I don't think there's anybody here that wants to see anybody
sent back in a body bag.
Exactly, and that's, you know, we support them as human beings.
We support them as human beings, exactly,
right.
Their lives.
Right, not as these soldiers. We don't want more soldiers in the world. I think it was The Clash that said so many armies can't free the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly true with all the armies going around these days. It's 11 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, and it's time for us to update the peace movement. It's also time to give out the phone number, 632-6901, area code 516. We'd like to hear what your thoughts on the war are and where you think it's going to go, how you think the peace movement is going, and maybe some predictions as to what Israel will be doing in the next couple of days. So far, I think they've done a real good job showing restraint, and I think that's something positive to be said. And I don't often say positive things about any country in that region, but in this particular case, I think turning the other cheek, which maybe isn't quite what they think they're doing, but reacting to violence with nonviolence, I think can be a very effective tool. And if we had only done that, perhaps we wouldn't be in the shape we're in now. 632-6901. This is the WUSB Peace Movement Update for Sunday, January 20th. There were 100,000 people at the rally on January 19th in Washington, D.C. Another rally is scheduled for next Saturday, the 26th. Buses will be leaving from Southampton, West Hampton, Patchogue, Fort Jefferson, and Smithtown. Numbers to call for those buses are 744-2745-369-2171 and 744-2442, all area code 516. There's also a bus leaving from Stony Brook, and if you want more information on that, call 516-689-7290. Also, on Saturdays, every Saturday, there's a vigil at Congressman George Hochbruckner's office at the intersection of Route 347 and Wireless Road. The vigil runs starting at 12 p.m. And if you want information on contacting more elected officials, we suggest you call the League of Women Voters for the phone numbers and addresses of those elected officials. The phone number for the League of Women Voters is 549-4171, area code 516. On Sunday, January 20th, there will be a rally at the H. Lee Dennison Building in Hopog. That's on the road called 347 or 454. Be starting at 10 a.m. on Sunday. A rally at the Dennison Building sponsored by UJA. Also on Sunday, a prayer vigil for peace will be held at the Bridgehampton United Methodist Church in Bridgehampton. The church is the first one on the right as you enter Bridgehampton from the west on Montauk Highway. People who have loved ones in the Gulf are urged to come. Support groups will be organized. The number to call for more information on this prayer vigil is 537-0753, area code 516. That's Sunday the 20th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at the Bridgehampton United Methodist Church. A day of peace and sharing is planned at the John Glenn High School, the Huntington Area Student Strike for Peace, on Wednesday, January 30th, 1991, starting at 8 a.m. For more information on that, 499-6392. The WUSB Peace Movement Update is heard every hour on the hour, bringing you news of local and national efforts to help stop the Gulf War. If you have information on events of any sort, please call us and let us know so we can spread the word. Our number is 516-632-6498.
King. When we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday as a national holiday, it is a day to honor his life and dream, a day to reaffirm the ideals of freedom, justice, and opportunity for all, a day to pay tribute to Dr. King, who awakened in us the best qualities of the American spirit. Remember what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. stood for on January 21st. Together, we will make Dr. King's dream live. For more information, call the New York State Martin Luther King Commission. Phone toll-free, 1-800-647-KING. But I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong
time. I've been the right thing, but I must have used the wrong time. Hey, folks, our telephone lines are wide open. I don't understand this at all because we could not keep the calls from stopping when this thing first started. Don't forget about what's going on in the world. I know a lot of people are. I know the networks have gone back to the sitcoms and all kinds of other things. But it's important to keep this as number one subject. Otherwise, we'll fall into complacency and we'll just get used to living during wartime. We'll get used to the roll of names on the 10 o'clock news. We'll get used to all of this garbage that we don't have to get used to. 632-6901, area code 516. Let us hear from you. We have John here, who's from the local area. He's a high school student. John, I'd like to ask you, are there many high school students that are as aware as you are, in your opinion?
Not in my school, no. I go to Islip Bosie, so I think people are very deprived of information.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've been attacked numerous occasions.
How so?
Because I was handing out flyers with information on them in school. I mean, they were just stating information, you know, on what you can do to help out, you know,
right,
for people who are interested. And I was attacked by a lady. One of the lunch aides or something came over to me and tried to yank him out of my hand, and without even looking at what I was handing out, called me a communist.
Lunch lady?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And her name is Cookie. We call the Cookie Monster. So,
we don't have to get into personalities here.
But she came over and she yanked him out of my hand. She tried to yank him out of my hand. She got a few, and she called me a communist without even looking at what I was handing out. Told me I did not have a right to hand these out.
Uh-huh.
So my reaction to that was I stood up and I said, no, I will not stop handing them out. I'll continue to hand them out.
Before this,
I was handing them out, you know, discriminately to people who, I thought were in support of the peace movement. But after this, I got up after she said this, I got up and I started handing them out like hotcakes. I mean, everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like, you know, I can't have these. You might as well take them.
And were,
you know,
were people taking them?
Yes, a lot of people were taking them. Good. But the thing was, she was going around to people, and she was telling them they couldn't have them. So, you know, a lot of students didn't want to get in trouble for this, you know, so they gave them up. And I was telling people, don't give them up. You know,
that's crazy.
Right.
That's so insane.
Yeah, it's censorship.
Keep
it's
the
really,
paper.
It's censorship. I'm sure if I was handing something out that was, you know, for for give blood or something like that, she wouldn't have taken it away, but you know.
As a student, you do have certain rights, and what you can do is contact the ACLU.
Yeah, that's
in
what
the
I'm
city.
Trying to work with.
And there's also a good book out there that any student who is interested should read called The Rights of Students. I think you can find it in your library. Maybe not in your school library, but certainly in your public library. And find out about those things, because there's a lot of students are very aware these days. I'm hearing about a lot of walkouts in support of peace, and a lot of activism throughout the country. And it's a positive thing. You know, I wasn't, in a way I was expecting this, in a way I wasn't expecting this. You know, I wasn't expecting this level of awareness at this particular age group. I thought it would be more of a struggle. But we had 100,000 people in D.C. today, and more people in other parts of the country. I think for San Francisco at 50,000. So that's a lot of people. A lot of people to come out and say something like this, especially when it's being pounded into their head over and over and over again that the majority of the people support this war. And I think it's being pounded into our heads so much so that we don't do this, so that we don't send the wrong message to Saddam Hussein. I'm so sick of being told what message to send to Saddam Hussein.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we have to be true to our own values. We have to say what we believe in and be a democracy, because that is what we are supposed to be. What these other folks are asking us to do is to suspend being a democracy so that Saddam Hussein doesn't get the wrong idea, so that we all talk in one voice, and anybody that you know, that disagrees is anti-American.
I think democracy is not one voice.
Definitely.
It is the expression of many different voices.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people are just like ignoring the issues instead of facing the facts. You know what I'm saying? Facing these issues, they'd rather just ignore them and say, well, let's all just have one voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to face these different opinions, you know, and confront them instead of, you know, pushing them aside and calling them unpatriotic and
right.
Un-American. You know, if you don't like something, face it and, you know, confront that issue.
That's definitely the way a democracy is supposed to work. I don't know. This is the beginning of a very troubling time. Where do you see it going?
I don't know. I really don't. Hopefully. I don't know. I just don't know what to say right now, you know.
Right. Well, I don't think many of us do, because it's, you know, it's new to a lot of us.
Yeah.
Some of us remember for what it was like in the past. Some of us have never seen anything like this before. But as I said before, I think more of us are aware of the negativity of war of any sort, and how we wanted to stop as quickly as possible.
See, a lot of the kids that are like pro-war, or, I don't know, pro-patriotism as it's being called now, are, they're like, their role models are like Rambo and people mm-hmm. like that. They don't understand that war is a very ugly thing. It's not like I was saying, it's not like some G.I. Joe cartoon where people get shot at but no one gets hit, and only if people do get hit, it's only the enemy.
You know, so far,
it's not like that.
So far, though, it's been a very clean war, at least for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking less than a handful of people killed, apparently, on our end. And, great success so far. But then again, you have to wonder how much of that is, we're getting everything through the Pentagon. I mean, it's all going through them before it gets to us. How much of that is propaganda of some sort? And even if it is all true, how long can that possibly last?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a war has a way of changing.
I heard someone say yesterday, excuse me, that a lot more people have died on the hands of George Bush than have died on the hands of Saddam Hussein.
Well, you know, there's all these allegations as to what was going on in Kuwait, atrocities, things like that. And, you know, I'm not saying it's not true. I'm sure quite a bit of it is, because whenever you have soldiers moving into a country, atrocities happen. I mean, it happened in My Lai, didn't it? And those were American soldiers. I don't think anyone is immune from that. Hussein is not a very nice person. I don't think anyone here is saying that either.
Of course not.
But it's just, when you enter into a war, all that sort of gets blurred, you know? You forget who is bad and who is good, because everybody is killing everybody. And in the end, it doesn't really matter who is good and who is bad. When you're in a war, it's just it's a sickness that that spreads so quickly, and already it's spread to encompass a huge amount of land over there, and we don't know what other parts of the globe are going to be affected. You know, I can't figure out why we're not getting any calls at all. Are people really that numb to this? It's either one of two things. Either everybody's glued to the TV set because the world is being blown up, or maybe there's some wrestling match on or something, or nobody cares. What do you think it is?
Nobody cares.
Well, you've been out on the streets a lot more than I have. You were at the Hochberg vigil today, right?
Yeah, and I was protested with Melville. And I was in the city.
How many people were there?
With Melville?
Yeah.
Oh, there was about, I'd say about 200
people.
200 people? 150, 200.
I mean, for South Setauke, that's pretty damn good, I think.
Yeah, we had a counter-strike of 20 for a laugh, that is.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, then those people must be around somewhere, so give us a call, 632-6901, area code 516. Because if you get silent about anything, you know, you might as well not exist. And I don't expect only people that agree with us to call, because that would make things pretty boring, wouldn't it? If you disagree with us, however vehemently, we invite you to call us too. 632-6901. We've got two calls on the line. If I see one more call, I'll go to the phones. I don't want to be a bastard about this or anything, but I just believe there are more people out there, more than two people listening, that think something about this war. I mean, this is, you know, we've been talking for a couple of years now about the state of the world and how things are you know, getting more and more interesting. And now it's war. Now it's a horrible war. It could be, you know, tens of thousands of people dying in the next couple of months. This war could drag on for more than a year. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about Israel being bombed? I mean, Israel would not have been bombed had we not launched the attack on Iraq. I am not by any means justifying an attack on Israel, but the fact of the matter is we're in sort of a stepping stone here, where you do one thing, that leads to another thing, that leads to another thing. So far, Israel has been very good with not responding.
The domino effect.
Yeah, the domino effect. But supposing something happens, supposing somebody, you know, attacks Iraq with a nuclear bomb or something. It's possible. It could happen. It just could keep on escalating. What we are saying is we want it to stop escalating. We want peace. We support the people over there. We support the soldiers over there. And we want them back here. And we want peace to reign throughout the whole area. And we do think that is possible. We do think it is. We don't think it's been given enough of a chance.
Well, I'd like to say something if there's any anti-war protesters out there. A lot of people are very aware of what they're against, but I think a lot of people don't keep in mind what we're for. We are for peace.
That's right.
So keep that in mind, you know, when you're protesting and everything like that, that we are for peace. Don't react in violence.
Okay, 632-6901. We've got a full switchboard. I'm proud of you folks. Good evening.
Hi, is this the radio program?
Yes, it is. You're on the air.
Hi, I just didn't want you to feel alone that there are people out there.
All right.
I think my biggest complaint with this is the news coverage. I think it's appalling that all the networks are just playing into the Pentagon's hands. I've been telling people at work who seem to show a lot of care about what's going on to tune into Stony Brook Network, because I don't know what else to tell them. That it's such a Nintendo war, that everything is so removed, where all one sees our pictures from the top of the bombers. They don't see the arms and the legs flying, obviously. And that's all they're getting on the news is, I think it's just appalling. It's like there's nowhere to go now. If we don't get it from the news, where are we going to get it? Mm-hmm. I rented 1984 tonight. I think that's very appropriate, from the video store.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, what's going to happen with Jane Fonda now? Here she's at, I guess she's, you know, an item with that Ted Turner, who owns one of those newscasts.
CNN, yeah.
And she was such a spokesperson in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, I was wondering if she surfaced at all.
I think she's been remarkably quiet. She's gotten a very negative reputation, obviously, for what she's done in the past. I don't think much of that is deserved, actually. But on the subject of CNN, I think it's really kind of funny the way that they've been portrayed throughout this whole thing. Everybody in Iraq is watching them. Everybody here is watching them. I just hope that they're not becoming a victim to any kind of propaganda war. I hope they're remaining neutral as far as what they're reporting.
I don't know. What I see is all the stations are the same. You know, whether it's CNN and 7, except CNN at least doesn't have those ridiculous newscasters that make fun and react to the news in the most simplistic, ridiculous, embarrassing ways.
Do you have any examples of that?
I heard this wasn't secondhand that a Rowland or John Rowland, I don't know what channel he's on.
John Rowland? Yeah, he's Channel 5.
Yeah, let's get him, let's hit him or something. I mean, these are people we're talking about. Whether we agree with them politically or not.
John Rowland is the same newscaster that was putting down a homeless person.
Is he 5? Is he with that Sue Simmons?
No, that's Channel 4. They all kind of blur. I know.
I don't watch much television.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a point made on another radio station about the wonderful turnout in Washington. Somebody said, well, there were 1 million people for a pro-choice rally a while ago, and it didn't make any difference to Bush. Well, this. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, you know,
another thing that you might not have heard is that a factory in New Jersey that is given a contract for the body bags, it's called the White Industries in Patterson, we're now told that they're not going to be called body bags anymore. They're going to be human remains pouches.
Certainly makes me sleep a lot easier.
Exactly.
Well, you know.
So I really rely on this college station as a local source of news. Otherwise, I don't know where else to get it from. I'm kind of glad that Fred Brunning is running the in Newsday. He has like the leading news reportage. Only because in the past what he's written is usually with a lot of compassion, and I always felt he's right on the money. But Newsday endorsed the war, as well as 80% of the American newspapers. Yet all the people that I talk to, nobody wants this war. And of course we're all supporting the guys over there. I mean, there's no conflict on this.
Well, you know, I suspect that maybe the questions that are being asked in these polls are being phrased in such a way that it makes it seem like these people are gung-ho for the war, when actually maybe they say what you just said. Yes, I support the people over there. Maybe that's taken as a pro-war stance. Because you're right. Everybody that I know does not want this to be continuing.
Exactly.
And everybody I know and everybody they know thinks the same thing. I mean, of course, there are some people that don't think that, but it just seems that we're a lot more than 13% or whatever.
That's what I think, too. And I think what's happened is, of course, I don't go along with what I've heard about all the dictators over there, Hussein and everybody. But Bush, I think he went in there, and I don't think he knew what he was doing because things are toppling. And I heard an analysis about how he's using a NATO computerized kind of strategy to the world that has no feel for the politics of the region, and that's exactly what's happening, and he's in it. Another analysis that this can go on for like 50 years, like the Cambodia regime, where the people are so dug in, where it started after Vietnam. So when I heard that tonight he has more reservists, he called for more reservists, I think that might be true. This might be going on for years and years.
And the draft could very well be started up again. And as I've said before, the draft can be initiated overnight. They have the means to do it. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you're in an area where it affects directly people in that age group. I wish people did call you more. I wish people were more involved. I don't know why they aren't.
I think it involves speaking out. Like you said before, if I speak out, will it make a difference? I think it will, because when you have hundreds of thousands of people marching around, making a lot of noise, you'll see on TV, they'll say these people are wrong and we're not going to pay any attention to them, but you better believe it does make a difference. John has something to say. Go ahead.
I think you have to encourage these people who are in the draft range to call the War Resisters League and sign up to be a conscientious objector.
How did you get your courage? And how did you learn what you've learned?
I listen to people. You know, I don't just listen to one side. I listen to both sides, you know. You have to read.
I think I need more courage. I was thinking, look how Congress and the Senate can't even look to them. Nobody's willing to stand up for things except the most simplest knee-jerk reaction, like, you know, let's get them, you know. But to really have courage of your convictions these days.
I want to help save lives.
I'm going to have to practice more of that in the face of of simple kind of reactionary people around me, you know.
Well, you know, I think you get your courage by knowing that you're not alone, and I can tell you, you are not alone. A lot of people are being, I guess, intimidated into being silent. I mean, when you see on TV these flag-waving people saying, you know, we're right, everybody else is wrong, and only 13% of the people disagree with us, you kind of have doubts. I've even had those doubts. I was thinking today, hey, maybe I shouldn't be saying these things because maybe it'll be taken the wrong way. But I realized that's not right. I would not be standing up for what I believe in. I've got to express my doubts when I see them. Everybody has the obligation to do that.
I think so, too. Somebody said in Israel, I was listening to a radio program with a guy from Israel, and he said, I could say, we don't have the freedom of expression as you guys have here. Maybe nobody listens over here, but at least you can say it. And I thought, boy, even in Israel they can't do this. You know, they can't say what's on their mind.
Uh-huh. Well, there are censors everywhere, and of course we have our censors as well in the war zone. That's why it's important that we see through that. Even, I believe, Walter Cronkite was telling us that on TV the other day, and he's somebody I think we should listen to because he's seen quite a bit. Everything that comes out of that region, he said, is being monitored and censored, so it might as well be just one news source. You have to take whatever they say with a grain of salt, a very big one.
He said that on the television?
He certainly did, and I think he makes a lot of sense.
I'm surprised. Good.
All right, you want to go on
some
more calls?
Well, I hope we get some more callers.
Yeah, we do have a whole bunch, in fact. Where are you calling from?
Smithtown. I was going to go today to Washington, but obviously I got this cold thing, so I figure I'll go next Saturday. I was glad to see a number for a Smithtown bus.
Uh-huh. Okay, no point infecting 100,000 people with the cold, so we hope to see you there next week.
Okay, and keep on with the good work.
Okay.
Bye.
John has something. One more thing to say. Go ahead.
I'd just like to recognize all the people who supported us today at Hart Bruckner's office.
Okay.
We had a lot more support than we had, one finger flying at us.
Right. Okay. That's a very good point.
Keep it up.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people are out there, and it does make a difference what you say. Okay. Let's take some more calls. 632-6901. Good evening.
How you doing?
Okay. Speak up. Can you speak louder, please?
Yeah?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What's up?
Hello?
Yeah.
Speak up. Say something.
Okay. The one thing I really think Saddam Hussein is really messed up with, he thinks...
Hello?
Yeah?
We're having a lot of trouble hearing you. Can you just speak up a little louder?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, while you're getting your act together, let's go on to another call. Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Come on, is everybody confused out there? Let's go.
Who is this?
You got to turn down your radio.
Who is this?
This is the radio station. Did you call us or not?
Yeah, what's your name?
Sorry?
What's your name?
My name's Eric.
How come I'm not on the air?
Because you're on delay. While you figure that out, let's go to another call. Good evening.
Hello, Eric?
Yeah.
Hey, what's up? What are you up to?
Well, we're talking about the war.
Eric, can I ask you something?
Go ahead.
On the radio, you're saying something else, and then you're on the phone. How do you do that?
Sorry?
You're talking to me now, right?
Yeah.
I hear you on the radio talking to some other guy. How do you do that?
It's magic of delay system that confuses everybody, I know, but let's try not to be confused.
Oh, so after he hangs up, I'll go on the radio?
No, you're on the radio now. You're just on 6 seconds in the future, or in the past. I don't know. I can't explain it. It's confusing to me, too. How do you feel about the Gulf War? That's what we're talking about tonight.
I'm just scared, you know.
What? You're scared?
Yeah.
Well, you should be scared. Are you of draft age?
Yeah.
Are you ready to go? Are you ready to be called up by the moment's notice?
No.
Why not?
Huh?
Why not? Are you anti-American?
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
I mean, are you anti-American? You don't want to fight for your country? You don't want to go over there and spill your blood for oil?
I want to go and, you know, and die.
Uh-huh. Well, I would say that's a human reaction, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about people that say you should drop everything and run over there and be a part of this?
Well, I don't know. I just have all mixed feelings about this, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, I do feel, you know, I feel concerned, you know, about a lot of troops over there and families out here, you know, not being able to sleep at night.
No, of course not. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah, worrying about their families, but, you know...
Do you know anybody that is over there?
Well, no, I have nobody from my family, but I have a lot of friends that have, like, you know, girlfriends and boyfriends. Right now, a friend of mine from school called me from Rhode Island because she has her boyfriend out there, you know, and she's, like, you know, really worried that, you know, she'll never see him again. But, you know, it's just... Eric, in your opinion, do you think this war will last long?
Do I think it will last long?
Hello?
Sorry, I had the wrong button pushed. Do I think it will last long?
Do you think it'll be, like, long, like, you know...
It certainly has the potential to last a very long time. And everybody's saying that. When you see people in the Pentagon saying, you know, the American public should not be too euphoric.
Yeah.
This could, there's going to be a lot of sacrifices here. That raises alarms in my head. It makes me want to say, oh, boy, what the hell have we gotten into this time, and how are we going to get out of it? Because, you know, while I'm sitting here saying that I think war is bad and I think this should stop right away,
yeah.
Another part of me is saying, well, yeah, but how the hell are you going to do that at this point?
Yeah.
We've jumped into this thing now.
Yeah.
We can't just leave, because if we just leave, it's going to really leave everything in a precarious state.
Yeah.
But if we stay, you know, what's going to happen then? That's why we wanted this not to happen in the first place. We wanted to give diplomacy more of a chance. We wanted to, you know, to have the sanctions work a little bit longer. And it's, you know, almost... I think if you ask people, was it a good idea to go in there militarily, I think you'll find that not 80% of the people think it was.
Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of, like, in a lot of states, people have been, you know, like, you know, having protests. A lot of the, Governor Mayor Dinkins was upset because he felt, you know, that if President Bush would have let the sanctions, you know, keep on, you know, that they were having progress. You know, that the sanctions were working out, you know?
Right.
But, you know, it's just that there's, you know, a lot of, like I said, you know, there's, like, a lot of guys out there, you know, like, you know, a lot of guys do say, you know, if they draft, you know, I'm proud, you know, to go serve my country, but there's a lot of people, a lot of other ones, you know, that are, like, you know, like, I'm nervous, so, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's understandable. I mean, we are human beings, the soldiers over there are human beings, and we cannot forget that. We cannot just think of them as soldiers who are there spilling their blood so that we can continue driving our cars. That's not right.
Yeah.
And that, you know, at least for another thing, why are they there? Let's all think about that for a second. Why are they there? They are there for oil. I don't know if anybody can argue that point, because how can you argue that? That is why we want Kuwait so badly, because of oil. Not democracy, not freedom,
yeah.
Nothing like that. It's oil. Now, do you think it is right to spill blood for oil? You know, I have to say it's not.
Yeah, I'm with you, you know, it's just, you know, a lot of, it's just, and a lot of the posters, you know, like if you see on television, a lot of the posters that the people are carrying is like, no blood for oil, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people scared and you know, worried, and, because, you know, like I said, you know, there's a lot of families, you know, that, you know, then, their sons and daughters left, you know, and they don't hear from them, and, you know, so they're just, I don't know.
You know what else gets me upset? That's one more thing I just thought of that really gets me upset.
Uh-huh.
That's all these people that are saying how Germany and Japan are not putting in their fair share, and how the people there are against war, and how dare they be against this.
Right.
Do you remember World War II? I mean, you know, maybe you don't remember World War II, but you know about World War II, and you know that we were fighting Japan, we were fighting Germany,
right.
And we were the ones that that made the rules for the rebuilt governments, rebuilt societies of those countries,
right.
And one thing that we instilled very strongly in them was no more wars for you guys, no more fighting,
yeah.
You know, peace is the way,
yeah.
And now we're angry at them because they believe it, because they say peace is the way and we shouldn't be fighting wars. The Japanese do not want to fight a war. The Germans do not want to fight a war. If you had said that 40 years ago, everybody would have been happy. Now we're saying that today, and everybody's saying, what's wrong with those people?
Right.
Well, what's wrong with us, you know? Yeah. Why?
Right. You know, it's just really, 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 I don't know, it's just all... It's just thing, you know, things to keep, you know, to keep in mind, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's just, you know, if I get called up, you know, I'll probably, you know, but it's not like something that I'm excited about, you know.
Right.
I really don't think they'd take me anyway, because I was just recently in a car accident and stuff, so I'm really all messed up.
Well, you know, everybody I know is giving me some excuse saying why the Army won't take them.
No, but I'm not even making it up, because I was in a car accident recently.
Well, I'm not saying you're making it up. I'm just saying that everybody.
Yeah, they're coming. A friend of mine
came
over the other day saying, you know, oh, I have this in my neck and stuff like that, you know. But I don't, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, they're going. You know. You know, we'll be, you know, fighting already. You know, I think that it'll progress, but it'll still have a lot of, you know, a lot of, there'll still need to be more troops, you know, trying to, you know, destroy a lot of their, you know, missile things, and I don't know.
Okay. Well, sir, I'm going to let you go now, but with this piece of advice, if you believe in peace.
Huh?
Stand up for it and speak out against war if you believe in peace. It's real important at this stage. Okay?
Right.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thanks. Okay.
All right. And you know, every phone caller has the potential to get through to even more people. I've seen it happen, and it's happening around us even as we speak. 632-6901. A couple of the high school kids are here. Want to introduce yourselves?
Hello, my name is Rick. I'm from Comstock High School. I'm 15 years old, and Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm Andrew Goldberger from Comstock High School, and I'm 14 years old.
Andrew, you're well known here at the radio station. When you're not calling us, you're visiting us here in person. Tell us about this war thing, how it's affected you.
Well, you know, I've been seeing a lot of the stuff, you know, on the news, and actually yesterday we went on a walk, you know, supporting the troops and what they were actually fighting for, instead of actually, you know, taking away from the issue that people are talking about, you know, peace. We were just saying, you know, the troops, you know, they're doing well.
They need our support.
Right.
Okay, now, what precisely do you mean they need our support? I mean,
we're supporting what those troops are fighting for, which is the liberation of Kuwait. And I don't believe that any country should be taken over without a legitimate excuse. And Iraq didn't have a legitimate excuse to take over this country.
What about all of the other countries in the world that have been taken over by other countries? Should we intervene militarily every time?
I wish we could.
Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Tibet, South Africa, various parts of the African continent.
That was a
South
different
American continent, places in Asia. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That was a different time and place. Like when we marched the Indians out, we were allowed to because it was from a different time period, and it was a totally different story in all those countries because, I mean, it's a different story with that. This we can actually do something about. The United States of America can do something about Kuwait.
Well, Lithuania right now is happening at the same time. It's the same time that Iraq invaded Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What about the Chinese crackdown on the pro-democracy demonstrators? Shouldn't we have responded to that?
I really wish we could have, and I don't believe they should have cracked down on them.
Now, what do you see as the role of the United States? Are we obligated to step in every time something happens in the world? Are we the world protectors?
Well, I've heard a lot about this, that we're the 911 number for every country that has a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And since we are one of the strongest country in the world, I feel that we have an obligation to help out the smaller countries that are being overtaken by, like I said before, other countries that don't have a legitimate excuse to topple the government.
Now, what would you consider a legitimate excuse?
Well, I think the only war that was ever legitimate was World War II. Everything before that was just...
Well, I'm talking about legitimate excuses for toppling governments of small countries.
Democracy, genocide.
Well, when you look at the Spanish-American War,
mm-hmm.
And Puerto Rico and Hawaii and Guam that were taken over by the United States of America, that was based on, we actually put money in. Iraq is taking money out of Kuwait. We were putting money into Puerto Rico and Hawaii and Guam, and because they were in a depression and they needed the money.
Let me ask you this. Do you think this is a war about freedom, a war about democracy, or do you think it's a war about oil and money?
Well, I'd just like to point out that only 12% of our oil comes from this region. And I don't understand how people can say this is a war about oil when little percentages of our oil comes from there.
Well, then let me counter that with a question. Then, if only 12% of our oil comes from there, how come the gas prices have gone up so much?
Well,
and the oil prices worldwide have gone
well,
up so
well,
much.
Well, people, I think people were really stingy. They were counting their pennies. I mean, how much did it actually go up?
These are oil companies.
The oil companies are taking advantage of us. Mm-hmm. They're taking advantage of the situation. And Japan's oil prices haven't gone up at all. It's just the American oil companies are taking advantage of the situation. And that's why you see the rise of
oil
prices.
Not to get back to the original question, though.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this as being a fight? I mean, we talk about Saddam Hussein now as this horrible oppressor. Even a year ago, we weren't talking about him in nearly this light. Now we are dealing with the Syrian president, who we were recently condemning as a terrorist, but now he's an ally. We sold arms to Iran after they took our people hostage, and we were condemning them as terrorists. It makes you kind of wonder, you know. Also, the Kuwaiti royal family has been condemned by all kinds of groups from Amnesty International on as not being a very nice bunch of people either. So it kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it, what kind of war this is we're fighting. What are we fighting to protect, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, one thing you forgot to mention is that Iraq was on our side till, about a year ago or maybe 2 years ago.
Oh, Iraq even bombed one of our ships, and we forgave them right away. We said,
right.
Oh, it was a mistake. We understand.
Right.
They killed a lot of our people, but we understood it. So, exactly. What I'm saying is... we were allies with Iraq, no question about it, and so were the Soviets. So what is this war all about? What is it that we're fighting?
We're fighting for the liberation of Kuwait and to restore the legitimate government that's supposed to be there.
But why? I mean, if the government there is no fairer, no more free than the government that replaced
has taken
it
over.
Why don't we come in and do this every time there's a coup in some country somewhere, like in Haiti a couple of weeks ago, or some part of South America? Isn't it just one dictator replacing another?
Well, I don't think anybody no Kuwaitis had any qualms about the government that was ruling them. Everybody was happy, and you can see that because there are a lot of Kuwaitis that are fighting for the government. We just train them.
Keep in mind, though, that that Kuwait has a much higher standard of living than any of the surrounding countries. So obviously they're going to be in favor of keeping that way of life over another way of life. And obviously also, and I'm not for a second trying to think up a reason to support the move by Saddam Hussein, but to try to understand why he did what he did. Obviously, when you see that kind of wealth right next door to you, kind of flagrantly flown in your face, and as I understand it, back before this all happened, they were taking advantage of the oil prices. They were underselling or something along those lines. So naturally, he's going to feel some resentment. And if there is some kind of a claim on the land, as a lot of Iraqis do believe that they have a legitimate claim to Kuwait, this is not opinion, this is fact, they do believe that. Then you can see how this kind of a thing can come about. And it's not such a clear black and white issue. You know, it's not like Iraq invading Israel or something, or Iraq invading, Nicaragua or something. Obviously not related. But Kuwait, some people think that Kuwait is a part of Iraq. I know a lot, most of us don't.
I think Kuwait was established as Iraq for 2,000 years up until...
I think it was about 1950... That Kuwait
broke away, and established its own government.
Mm-hmm. Right, and in 1963, not many people know this. In 1963, Iraq went into Kuwait and tried to take it over, and no one responded. And Iraq left, and the same thing happened in 1971. Now in 1990, they fully took over. But I just like to say right now that. I do not support any government decision, George Bush. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that the reserves and all the people that went over there supporting us deserve our support. This thing should not be taken out on them. It should be taken out on the government if you have a problem with what they are there for.
Oh, I agree with you completely on that. And that's one thing that I think was... was a big mistake in the Vietnam protest was...
them spitting in the soldiers' faces when they came back.
Well, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just them, though. It was the government as well that ignored the troops coming back, that turned their back on them. And I think if you ask a Vietnam vet, most of the resentment will be towards the government that turned its back uh-huh. on the people. But in this particular case, I think the, as you say, we shouldn't direct our anger at the troops. I don't think I've seen very much of that. Have you seen that in the peace movement these days?
Not at all. I think most of them are saying that they support the troops.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I'd like to bring up is a lot of the demonstrators are saying that they support the troops, but they don't support the policy that put them there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't understand. These troops are fighting for that policy. If you don't support that policy, then you can't support the troops. I don't think that's...
Well, no. I think what they mean is they support the troops
as
people.
Individual,
a human. Because they're our friends, they're our relatives,
mm-hmm.
And we support them, but we want them to come home. And we want them to come home uh-huh. soon. We don't want them to fight a needless war. And we don't think that this is a war that that
needs
has
to
be fought. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, we understand that they're there following orders. And what we're mm-hmm. trying to do is change those orders. We uh-huh. try to stop those orders from being issued. But, you know, it's such a sad thing to see people sent over there for something that 20 years from now really isn't going to make any difference one way or the other.
Well, to their parents it will. They'll.
I'm talking about in world uh-huh. history, though,
in
far as
history books.
Who runs Kuwait, uh-huh. whether it's, you know, an Iraqi dictator or a Kuwaiti dictator, it's really not going to matter that much in the scheme of things. And it's... I would encourage people to speak out their true opinions one way or the other and to know why they're saying this. And I think, you know, a lot of people are saying and implying that you've got to give them unconditional support and not show any doubt as to what the policy is. And I think that can only be harmful because that will just, if you don't really believe in something and you keep supporting it and supporting it and supporting it until finally you realize that it was a mistake, think of all the harm that's been done. Than if you had been honest from the beginning and said, you know, I have my doubts about this. I think we have to voice our doubts. And because we are a democracy, we have the freedom to do that and thus the obligation to do that.
I think what you're saying makes sense. And I don't feel that I'm a firm believer in Thomas Thoreau's civil disobedience. And I think that everybody should speak their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my personal opinion. I don't think that any country should be taken over without a legitimate excuse, like I said before. And this is democracy. Everybody's entitled to an opinion. We're not one whole, as that fellow before John said, we're not all one speaker. Everybody has their own opinions.
Yeah, I think that's the key. You've hit it on the head there. Mm-hmm. Respect for different opinions, for different views. And that goes for both sides. When you're demonstrating out there against the war, you know, you don't have to think of the people that... that don't seem to agree with you as being rednecks or people that are warmongers, because it's not necessarily so. And the same thing goes for the people that are in favor of the action over there. Think of the people marching in the streets as, you know, having a different approach, in the end wanting basically the same thing, which is peace, wanting the people home, and wanting an end to this madness. I think if we can agree on that, it'll make our lives a lot easier.
Well, one thing no one has really mentioned so far is that there have only been one casualty so far with a couple of missing in actions.
I've heard the same thing.
That could be a biased report, you know, because Iraq says that 76 planes were shot down, and that was as of Thursday night.
I think they've added the total to 46 more today. Just today, mm-hmm. there have been 46 more planes shot down.
Well, was that the U.S. or the Iraq? Iraq
U.S. planes and British planes added together. They just added 46 more.
Now, what they are also saying is, you know, don't be optimistic about this. This is the military saying this. They're saying that it could go on for a long time and there could be a lot more casualties, especially when it moves to a ground war. And that's where I think you're going to see things really start changing on the home front, especially because when you see, you know, however many people, 50, 100 people dying a day, it's going to take its toll. And then we're going to really start asking ourselves, why are we really there? And what we're trying to do now, I think, is ask that question now before it keeps happening. We're going to take some phone calls. 632-6901 in the time that we have left. And we're talking to a couple of high school kids here that we don't see quite eye to eye, but I guess we respect our rights here, which is cool. So let's hear what you have to say out there. Good evening. Sorry, go ahead.
I have four quick questions right before I talk about the Gulf crisis.
Go ahead.
Do you used to not have a delay on your show?
Well, sometimes we do and sometimes we don't.
What does it depend on?
It depends on decrees that come down from above.
All right. Where did you get the name for your show?
The name Brain Damage? It's been the name for the last 3 years, and I don't know. I guess it just came from the mood I was in at the time. I decided to come up with a name.
All right, and do you know what, Raz, how many more shows does he have?
Raz has a couple of more shows.
Why is he getting cut off? Or?
He'll have to tell you that himself. I cannot speak for Raz myself.
All right, yeah, what school are those kids from?
We're from Comsawag.
Comsawag High School.
And the other fellow, John, was from Ward Melville, I believe.
I don't know what that is, but, about the...
That's out here somewhere.
Crap. Don't you think we should have won by now? I mean, it's 30 nations against one.
It seems so incredibly stilted as far as, it's a good question. How could one country put up such a fight against 30 nations?
Well, what I'm thinking is that Saddam Hussein still has an advantage. Now, I know I might sound crazy with that, but his troops are presently in Kuwait. And unless the U.S. drag each one of the Iraqi troops out of Kuwait,
right,
either in a body bag or where they're still living, I mean, there's no way to get them out of there. I mean, if you shoot them down, they're still going to be there. You got to pick them up. They can just lay on the ground and just, stay there.
Consider this. I mean, we've been shooting all these rockets and having all these planes and everything flying over there, but where is the front line? Where is the border? Kuwait is still part of Iraq. We haven't gained an inch. So, I mean, it's going to take a long time because we've got to fight this on the ground.
The thing about Israel, like, they don't want, if they fight back, all the Arab nations will go against them?
I don't know if that's really going to happen, because how can you actually stand back and say you shouldn't defend yourself if somebody bombs you?
They want to fight for themselves. I mean, they can kick the crap out of all those nations. They got so much.
That's true, but there's two things there. Number one, how is anybody going to know the difference if Iraq does, retaliate? Because there's so much, bombardment going on over Baghdad now. How are they even going to tell? Is Israel going to say, hey, that third missile that came over in that hail before, that was us? That's the only way you're going to be able to tell it was them. And also, maybe if Israel comes over with their planes, we might shoot them down by accident, not knowing who they are.
You don't even know what's going on there half the time.
Who doesn't?
We don't, because, all the reports of how many planes have been shot down. I mean, Vietnam had better coverage than we have now.
Yeah, well, it's more controlled now, a lot more controlled. If you look at the media, you'll see occasionally they complain about that quite a bit.
I don't know why everybody's crying about the Super Bowl. They can just listen to it on the radio.
What's the story with the Super Bowl?
Channel 7's covering it, and they don't know if they want to program the Super Bowl, because in case something major happens with this war, they won't be able to break to it. And, people aren't going to be upset.
Uh-huh.
If they don't want to watch the Super Bowl, they just watch Channel 2 or Channel 4.
Well, it's like I said, Bush should have made the deadline the 30th of January, not the 15th.
Everybody's crying about this. I don't see what's so wrong. I mean, I get drafted in 2 years if it's still going on that long.
How do you feel about that?
I'm just going to move somewhere with I see it this way. I'd rather go to jail than get killed.
Uh-huh.
I'd rather serve jail time. I don't know. Do you agree with me about that?
Well, I think in a way you're fighting a war of a different kind if you do that. And, a lot of people would say you don't want to serve in the military. That means you're a coward. Well, I don't think you're a coward if you wind up going to jail instead, because jail is hell, too.
Yeah, but at least, I don't know. There's two sides, but I'd rather not go over there. I mean, I'd go over there if I was, the drummer or something, something that I know I wouldn't get killed.
Uh-huh.
Well, one thing about the Super Bowl, how do you think ABC feels? I mean, they paid a multi-million dollar contract to get the Super Bowl in the first place, and they're covering,
all this is about, I'm sick of hearing about money. I'm really sick of this.
That doesn't want to play the Super Bowl? Isn't it ABC doesn't want to play it now?
Right, because they feel that the world situation is more important.
Yeah, but then they pay all that money.
Exactly. That's
it always boils down to money. I'm really fed up with that.
So wasn't it 5 months ago, or how long did they pay for it?
Oh, I think this is years ago. You know, they do it for about 4 or 5 years in advance.
No, I don't know. It makes no sense. I think people can listen to it on the radio.
Okay, well, I don't want to, you know, take away from the war and talk about the Super Bowl too much. But, sir, let me just say, you know, when the time comes and you've got to make that decision, don't let anybody tell you that by not wanting to go over and get killed, you're not doing what you're supposed to do, because...
It doesn't matter to me, because I'll say, good, get over, go over there and get all your guts blown out, and I'll see you on some plaque, and I'll say, yeah, look at me and look at you.
It's a natural feeling not to want to go over and get your brains blown out. It's just, you know, a simple, natural human instinct, and I think you should be applauded for preserving that. Thanks very much for calling. We're going to go on to another call. Good evening.
Yeah, hi. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead. Turn down your radio or you'll get very confused.
Okay.
And everybody should be aware of that out there in Radio Land.
The question is, has Congress actually declared war? I mean, we hear that, we're hearing stories, this is a police action, this is that, but we haven't actually heard whether or not Congress has actually declared war.
Congress has not declared war. What they have done is authorized military action. Now, last week we talked about this a little bit, and what the difference is, it's not much of a difference at all, because right now we are engaged in a full-fledged war, and it doesn't make a difference to me whether or not it's declared. It's, you know, the same effect. So I think it's kind of pointless to even discuss what the differences are, because... there might be some kind of legal thing that comes up in a few months. Maybe we have to tell Congress something in 6 months, but for the moment, it makes no difference.
Yeah, well, to debate the guy who was just on, I thought a lot about enlisting a couple of years ago, and I would have no hesitation about joining up right now to go over there, regardless of whether this is a war over oil or money or whatever.
Well, you know, that right is yours, but, you know, I think people do have the right to be fearful of, you know, dying in a situation like this.
They have an obligation to be fearful. Everybody should,
fear death.
Well, I think that's sort of a nice.
I think everybody has a different way of approaching this, and I think that's what we have to respect is other people's opinions as far as how to approach going into a war. Is that what you're saying, sir?
Yes, I respect his opinion, you know, don't get me wrong or anything, but he would have probably a better chance of surviving over in the Middle East than he would in jail.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure in some ways that is true, but, you know, the military life just rubs a lot of people the wrong way, and it's hard to penalize people for that, for not wanting to be a part of the military life. You know, I look to the day when all this will not be necessary. Someday that's got to happen, because we can't keep going this way. We can't keep having so many different armies fighting each other. It's got to resolve itself at some point. Not in our lifetimes, obviously, but at some point.
When Bush leaves office.
Not when Bush leaves office. He's only one person.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. 632-6901. Let's roar through these calls that we have left. Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, how you doing? Go ahead.
What do you think about the whole movement that's going on now that is reminiscent of the Vietnam anti-war movement? Do you think it's the same?
Do I think the anti-war movement? No, the anti-war movement is completely different, because this anti-war movement has started... well before the war began. The anti-war movement is made up of a large number of diverse people, and I think we've learned a lot from Vietnam. I think the military has learned a lot from Vietnam too, and how to present a war to the public. For instance, they were very careful in saying that they're avoiding hitting civilian targets, they're avoiding hitting mosques and things like that, and that's all fine and good if it is in fact true. But I think the basic premise of the anti-war movement is that all war is bad, and all war should be considered bad and not an option unless, as in World War II, there's absolutely no way to get around it. But, you know, consider World War II could never have taken place were it not for World War I, which was a completely unjustifiable war, in my opinion.
I agree, but I get the feeling that there are a lot of maybe 60s wannabes who have seen this as a way to get into the feelings that they wanted very much to recreate from the 60s.
Well, I don't doubt that there are some people like that, some holders on to the 60s, but you can't say that of the kids these days, and there's a lot of them, a lot of people from high schools and colleges, and they weren't around in the 60s. I think they're thinking of themselves, they're thinking of their friends and their future.
Well, Erica, yeah, I just wonder, because up until war broke out, when you would ask students, perhaps, or kids, teenagers, where Saudi Arabia is, they couldn't tell you where Kansas was. And I'm just wondering if, in fact, the media has recreated this time as a, you know, time of protest rather than really showing the issues and what's really going on.
Uh-huh.
Well, Erica, you've been asking me for months, maybe even years, if the youth is involved in my school and my classmates. And this has really, you know, brought us together and given us a purpose, you know, that we can do something, and an issue that we can all, you know, look upon. Different views, fine, but, you know, at least we have views. And
you don't all agree in your school, but you do respect each other's rights.
Right, of course.
That's certainly different from when I went to school, I can tell you that.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
This caller has an amazing way of changing their voice, yeah.
Can you get my friend Adam to call? Has he called yet?
Your friend Adam. Well, he might not be able to get through. Our lines have been pretty jam-packed.
Adam, call.
Getting off.
We will tell him to call, okay? Thanks very much for calling and for conveying that message. Mark Gunning is here with some interesting comments on conscientious objection.
Hi, Eric. Just some information for some people out there, because some people are real concerned and scared, and what if there is a draft and all of that, is some information on how to become a conscientious objector. The first thing you should start to do is start a journal and write how you feel about the war and what peace means to you, and keep writing in that journal as often as you can. Following the war is important, writing in it every day if you can, and keeping track of that. Next thing you should do is approach character witnesses who can write letters for you in support of your status as a conscientious objector. Good people to approach may be a local minister or someone who knows you well, a teacher, etc. You should document any peace marches that you were involved in. You should write your congressman about how you feel about the war and keep a copy of that letter. And you should be prepared to defend your position against a hostile position that an investigating officer from the armed services will take, as well as a chaplain and a psychiatrist. So be prepared to defend your position as a conscientious objector.
Okay, and thanks very much, Mark, for coming in with that information. And we are out of time. Brain Damage has reached the end of its life for this week. I want to thank all the people that stopped by. Thanks to all our high school friends.
Well, we thank you for letting you have us our say over the air.
Okay, and let's hope we get many more people coming by too. Thanks, John, over there on the floor for coming by. Thanks to all our callers. Thanks to all those people that tried to call but couldn't get through. We'll try again next week. We are on every week from 10 to 12. And Raz is up next, so stay tuned for that. But first, the Peace Movement Update. This is the WUSB Peace Movement Update for Sunday, January 20th. There were 100,000 people at the rally on January 19th in Washington, D.C. Another rally is scheduled for next Saturday, the 26th. Buses will be leaving from Southampton, West Hampton, Patchogue, Port Jefferson, and Smithtown. Numbers to call for those buses are 744-2745-369-2171 and 744-2442, all area code 516. There's also a bus leaving from Stony Brook, and if you want more information on that, call 516-689-7290. Also, on Saturdays, every Saturday, there's a vigil at Congressman George Hochbruckner's office at the intersection of Route 347 and Wireless Road. The vigil runs starting at 12 p.m. And if you want information on contacting more elected officials, we suggest you call the League of Women Voters for the phone numbers and addresses of those elected officials. The phone number for the League of Women Voters is 549-4171, area code 516.